This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is James Santel. I am in for Maggie today as she takes some well-deserved time off in this holiday season. Delighted to have you, honored to have you joining me and my terrific producer, Cardi, here in the broadcast stations of Civic Media for this hour and next hour as well on the Maggie Dawn Show. We have lined up for you in this hour and, yes, the second hour as well, an ambitious but achievable syllabus of important issues to talk about. And in many ways, they fall into the category of a tale of two administrations. The Biden administration, presently in place, President Joe Biden concluding soon, in about 28 days, his term as the president of our nation. And in 28 days, incoming, returning President Donald Trump. We're going to talk not only about some things that this administration has done in the area of commuting death sentences and issuing pardons in ways that accomplish justice. And then we're also going to talk about things that this president has done recently in connection with climate goals and attempted to keep future generations safe and secure here in Wisconsin, throughout our nation, across our planet. Also going to chat in that connection about a major case coming out of Montana, the next generation being at the forefront of advocacy for climate integrity, all of that related to justice in America, commutations of sentences just today on this Monday, December 23rd, by our sitting president, and then also comments by him and implementations of policy for the future with respect to the environment. And then we're going to review in some detail some of the things that the incoming president, Donald Trump, has talked about as well in the area of immigration and deportation, transgender issues, and yes, indeed, apparently some plans to retake Panama, if that is to be believed. All of that coming out of a major speech that he gave just yesterday at a convocation called America Fest, to the delight of virtually everybody who was there. We're going to talk about the implications of what Donald Trump has said. Again, in contrast, a tale of two very different administrations and the different approaches in major issues that affect our lives and our livelihoods. All of that on the Maggie Dawn Show today. We're also going to chat about a couple of other issues affecting our lives and our livelihoods, and beginning to conclude in the end of our second hour with some observations about something that hasn't happened in a number of years, frankly, since 2005, and that is the confluence of both Hanukkah and Christmas coming up this Wednesday, December 25th. We'll talk about that, the meanings of it, and the opportunities that are in front of us as a nation and as a world, again, in the spirit of interfaith confluence, in the notion that we are all one people. We may express our religious beliefs, our faiths differently, but in the end, we are all the same. And in fact, our Constitution in many ways affirms that very thing by first establishing that there will be no establishment of a religion in the United States of America, and second, just as important, if not more so, that everyone of any faith, has the capacity to exercise, to follow their religion as they feel appropriate. We're going to spend some time at the end of our second hour talking about all of that. But let us begin. Let us begin with talk about what the Joe Biden administration has done just today. You will recall, well, much in the news in recent days, begun in late November and continuing certainly throughout this month, the announcements by the Biden administration of a great number of commutations, and pardons of sentences. You recall well that under the Constitution, a pardon basically wipes out a conviction. It doesn't wipe it out historically. Of course, it's still in the history books. But for purposes of legal things and things in the courts, the civil rights that attend convictions, all of those removed by virtue of a pardon, effectively removing the sting and, frankly, the reality, the legal reality of a conviction from the records of our courts. A commutation, on the other hand, which is what the president has done recently and again today, leaves a guilty verdict, leaves a judgment in place, but reduces some or all of the punishment, basically reduces a sentence, presumably most often to time served, maybe some other lesser sentence imposed. That's the difference. President of the United States of America given virtually unfettered power to do just that under our Constitution, both pardoning and commuting sentences. You may recall well that on December 12th, President Biden commuted the sentence of about 1,500 Americans, which is a record for one day. And at that time, he pardoned 39 other people convicted of nonviolent crimes, sweeping acts of clemency that are virtually unprecedented in the history of America. America, he said, was built on the promise of possibility and second chances. He said the clemency represented his commitment to help reunite families, strengthen communities, and reintegrate individuals back into society. Of course, all of that also followed the pardon that he granted to his own son, Hunter Biden, anticipating sentencing both on a gun charge and also a tax charge out in California, pardoning him in late November before those sentencings happened. None of this without controversy, of course. None of this without a lot of discussion in America. And certainly today's commutations will once again prompt a lot of discussion. What exactly is it? What exactly is it that President Biden did today, commuting 37 death sentences ahead? And here is your tale of two administrations ahead of Donald Trump's plan, his articulated plan to resume federal executions in America. You recall well, of course, that this president, this attorney general, Merrick Garland, has also said that while there are many people who still are on death row in American, our federal prisons, a moratorium on actually executing those people. Those moratoriums, of course, don't extend to state offenses, and that's why that continues to happen in various places around the nation. But a moratorium throughout this administration, as Joe Biden looks to the end of his term, today commuting the sentences of nearly all prisoners on federal death row. He spares the life of 37 men just a month before Donald Trump returns to the Oval Office with a stated commitment during his campaign and even since then to restart federal executions for those people who are sitting on death row. Those affected by Joe Biden's actions today, all of whom were convicted of murder, and many of them heinous events, will serve life imprisonment without the possibility of parole instead of facing execution. That's an important part of the debate. It's certain to follow all of this. No possibility of the parole. These people are not being pardoned. They're not being released from prison. But their death penalties, their death sentences now reduced to life imprisonment. They will not be executed. Only three men, and we'll tell you about them, each of whom carried out some notorious mass killings in our recent history, you will recall them well, remain on federal death row with this possibility of execution of them. You may recall well that Joe Biden campaigned in 2020 on ending the federal death penalty. This is a part of his enactment, his pursuit of that promise. Proposed legislation in Congress did not go forward in advancing that goal, but he directed again the Justice Department to engage in a moratorium at the time, and that's what we have seen in recent years. What just today, the President of the United States said this. He said, "I'm more convinced than ever that we must stop the use of the death penalty at the federal level." He said, "In good conscience, I cannot stand back and let a new administration resume executions that I halted." He said that commutations were consistent with the standard he has imposed for halting executions in cases other than terrorism and hate-motivated mass murder. Went on to say, "Make no mistake, I condemn these murders." This is the president talking about what he's done today. "I condemn the murders. I grieve for the victims of these despicable acts, and I ache for the families who have suffered unimaginable and irreparable loss." Exactly the kinds of things that a president should say and should affirm, should believe about victims of heinous crimes like these, at the same time expressing a view that the death penalty should no longer be a part of our history. The White House, of course, supporting that with statements about exactly who it was who were the recipients of these commutations. We know something about them. 37 men, all males, 15 white, 15 black, 6 are Latino, 1 is Asian. Sentenced in 16 different states, including 3 that abolished the death penalty. 9 are in death row because they were convicted of killing federal prisoners. Now, one of the other things that the president has said that he is that he took a phone call, spoke to Pope Francis just last week, who was encouraging him to do what he has done today. All of that very, very significant in terms of what has happened along the way. An awful lot of people, again, looking to what has happened in this important event today and urging the president to do even more down the road. Three people not subject to these federal executions are Robert Bowers. He's 52 years old. You recall that name. He was a person in 2018. He gunned down 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, one of the greatest, most dramatic and traumatic, horrific hate crimes in our nation's history. Dylan Roof, 30. He's 30 years old. The white supremacist, also guilty of a heinous, heinous hate crime. 2015, he was the man who opened fire on black parishioners at a church in Charleston, South Carolina, also riveting and horrifying all Americans, killing 9 people at that time. And Dzhokhar Dzhernayev, he's 31. He was one of the two brothers who carried out that equally horrific bombing of the Boston Marathon way back in 2013, killing 3, maimed more than a dozen other people who continue to suffer as a result of that. None of those three right now on death row getting commutations by this president, but many others getting commutations today by virtue of the presidential authority established in the Constitution. And Joe Biden once again today expressing that view. We're going to be taking, of course, your calls, as always, throughout our program at 855-752-4842 on this and other topics. That number, once again, 855-752-4842. We're going to continue talking about this and other important things in the Biden administration as compared to the Trump administration. All of that coming up on this, the Maggie Dawn Show, here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. It's Monday, December 23rd. Continue to listen with us. Be a part of our discussion.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, guest hosting for Maggie as she is away on the holidays for some well-earned relaxation, obviously coming back in the new year to engage our communities in important discussions about the things that are affecting our lives here in Wisconsin, throughout our nation, across our planet. And that is our commission today as well. I'm here in the broadcast stations of Civic Media, along with my terrific producer, Cardi. And together we're also taking your questions, your comments, your observations about anything on our syllabus today. That phone number is 855-752-4842. Once again, 855-752-4842. Cardi always reminds me as well that you can drop a comment into the Civic Media line. We can share it on the feed. We can have you be a part of our important discussion here on Civic Media. I express my thanks to Maggie for letting me sit in her brief absence today and look forward to further discussions with with you today and in the future as well. We have just concluded a major discussion in our first segment about what Joe Biden did today in commuting the death sentences of 37 people in federal prison. Once again, he's got no authority to do it with respect to state prisoners. The Constitution only extends to pardons and commutations, reductions in the sentence for people who are in federal prison. 37 people today who this morning were on death row anticipating their execution no longer. They will not see the light of day. They will not be released. The Federal Bureau of Prisons will continue to house them, to incarcerate them throughout the rest of their lives. Life without the possibility of parole, that's the reduction in sentence from an execution sentence, and also excluded some people, the three of them, we talked about them already, who've engaged in horrific hate crimes in our recent history. Joe Biden saying, not for them. Not for them. And again, identifying for all of America who he is, what his view is about the death penalty, but also obviously acknowledging that there is a select group of people whose crimes, whose events in their lives affecting victims, affecting all of us, are in fact subject to the death penalty. That happening just today, of course, consistent with our approach that this is a discussion in many ways of a administrations of two different kinds. We know as well that Donald Trump has said during the course of his campaign that he supports the death penalty aggressively. He said during the 2024 campaign, just recently concluded, he called for an expansion, not a diminution, a expansion of the death penalty. He suggests that drug dealers and human traffickers, child sex abusers should be put to death. During his first term, Donald Trump restarted federal executions after a nearly 20-year, almost two decades of pause. All 13 were carried out in the final 6 months of his administration. He has not said how he'll expand the death penalty to new federal crimes. But we know, for example, that Luigi Mangione, who is the defendant who is charged with the brutal assassination in Manhattan a number of weeks ago, that he has also been charged by the federal system in addition to the state system. One of those federal charges potentially carries with it the death penalty. And that is significant. That will certainly animate much of what we're going to hear in that federal prosecution and certainly also in the state prosecution. Even today, his attorney, his defense attorney, bemoaning the fact that there is both a state prosecution and a federal prosecution. That federal prosecution likely raising the possibility of a death penalty imposition on Mr. Mangione. This issue, obviously, a part of our national discussion. We know that the Supreme Court has said that under the Eighth Amendment, although there have been much divided panels of the Supreme Court on this issue, Supreme Court has said that the reality is that under the Eighth Amendment, it is not cruel and unusual punishment to impose the death penalty. And that's why we have a patchwork of states in our nation, some of whom have the death penalty, some of whom do not. And that is in the discretion of the legislature. And under the federal system, of course, there are those federal laws that contemplate and permit with an awful lot of protections a federal prosecutor, an attorney general to seek the death penalty imposition by a federal judge. In the states, of course, same kinds of processes, but different from the federal system itself. Death penalty and the commutations of sentences just today, a big issue. Anticipate as well that in the coming days, the remaining 27, 28 days of this administration, Joe Biden will likely issue more pardons, more commutations. He is doing this fairly routinely these days, as do all presidents at the end of their terms, not without controversy. And all presidents, regardless of their political affiliation, have gotten both praise and criticism for doing these kinds of things. Look for more of that in this administration. Plainly, during the course of the Trump administration, at the end of it, in 2028, 2029, Donald Trump may well do the same thing with respect to those people he chooses to pardon. He has also indicated, of course, he is going to fairly immediately pardon about 1,200 people who have been convicted or otherwise in the process of moving toward a criminal judgment.
having to do with their assault, their attempt to undermine and overthrow the government on January 6th of 2021. He has promised during the course of his campaign to pardon those people, perhaps commute some sentences as well. This issue will loom large in the weeks and months and years ahead, as it will on all of our discussions here on Civic Media. Joe Biden also strong throughout his term in office in the area of the environment. We know that well. It was a part of his campaign in the previous campaign, and certainly as long as he was in the 2024 campaign, environment, a major piece of his proposal, undeniably, Kamala Harris, our vice president, also not just picking up that very important issue, but also moving it forward and committing to not only through the EPA, but also law enforcement, environmental justice, she spoke about, all these kinds of things would have been a piece of her administration, too. Once again, a very likely anticipation in America of a great change between what Joe Biden has been and what he has done and what Donald Trump will do in the area of environment. What did he do just recently? Well, just on Thursday of last week, Donald Trump spoke to America about an aggressive climate goal for all of us in the United States, probably not achievable in the remaining 28 days, but an aspiration. We're going to talk more about that as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Stay with us for that important discussion.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. Maggie has asked me to sit in for guest host this afternoon, this hour, next hour as well. Honored, delighted to do it, to occupy briefly Maggie's wonderful seat here in Civic Media World, and inviting you as well to be a part of our discussion. 855-752-4842 is that telephone number. You can also text us. You can drop a comment into the Civic Media drop box and be a part of the conversation with Cardi and me here on the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. Beginning to talk now about this major thing that Joe Biden has also announced, even if it's simply aspirational, for future climate goals here in the United States of America, announcing this past Thursday an aggressive new climate goal for the United States, saying just this: the country should seek to slash its greenhouse gas emissions, which have, of course, been at the focus of the Paris Accords and many other initiatives, by at least 61% below 2005 levels. Slash it to 61% below 2005 levels by 2035. That's the ambitious but achievable goal that he has announced just this past Thursday. Of course, the target is not binding. It's not legislative. He's not issuing an executive order. And it will, again, in the category of differences in administrations, almost certainly be disregarded by the incoming president. His name, as you know, is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has called global warming a scam. And even in the midst of that, Joe Biden going ahead, announcing his goals for this. 4 years of climate policies from a president who has sought to make global warming a signature of his administration. In a video address from the White House, Joe Biden said that his efforts, including pumping billions of dollars into clean energy technologies and regulating pollution from power plants and automobiles, amounts to the boldest climate agenda in American history. Cardi has for us some sound for what the president has said earlier today in talking about this major, yes, aspirational, but important thing that we should be following in the years ahead.
This week, I'm heading to Peru and Brazil to meet world leaders, and I'll be the first American president to visit the Amazon rainforest. We're going to discuss how we can resolve our toughest global challenges, including climate change, by working together. The United States has been leading that work. And today, I want to announce two more investments that will lower the energy costs for hardworking families and help tackle the climate crisis. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is going to award $250 million in rural energy for the American program grants to help over 1,000 farmers and rural small businesses install cost savings, clean energy, and energy efficient improvements all across 40 states. And the Department of Energy will award nearly $18 million to help communities nationwide to save money by improving energy efficiency and reducing dangerous climate pollution. This is a win-win. More jobs, more investment, cleaner air, and lower energy bills. Folks, there's nothing we can't do if we do it together. Let's do it, okay? God bless you all, and may God protect our troops.
That is the President of the United States today from the White House announcing these, not only these aspirational initiatives, but also things that are getting done right now. He still has the authority until noontime on January 20th to do those things that are part of his commission as our president. There's that wonderful portion of the Constitution that talks about taking care of government, taking care of all of us. That's the role that a president should play in his or her one day occupancy of the White House. That's what President Biden is doing today in announcing not only the aspirational portion of what we should do with climate issues in America and on the face of this planet, the goals that he has once again articulated today, but also investing quite literally monies in that. And those things will go out now. Those will establish programs and initiatives to keep us healthier and better in the times ahead. Nothing that an incoming president can do to reverse that. But he can, in fact, reverse these optimistic and achievable goals that the president is announcing today. Again, pledging to cut emissions 61 to 66% below 2005 levels by 2035. It's a significant update of the commitments the United States has already made. The president went on to say today that American industry will keep inventing and keep investing, he said. State, local, and tribal governments will keep stepping up. And together, he said, we will turn this existential threat, a threat, of course, that goes to our very existence, into a once-in-a-generation opportunity to transform our nation for generations to come. That is the commission he has given to all of us. That's the commission he has given, frankly, to the present government, to the future government. We will see if the incoming president lives up to his commitments to reverse that. And to go in the opposite direction. That would be a terrible, horrific thing for the policy of the United States government, but also, more importantly, for the planet itself. Joe Biden today going in the opposite direction, saying, I'm doing things practically that will encourage safer environments for all of us. And I'm asking us all, including the future president he's seeing, he's speaking to Donald Trump, too, and his administration, saying we've got an achievable goal here to keep future generations safe. Mr. Future President, embrace this as well. Last year, we know from this administration, as it reports accurately upon the nature of our problem, emissions were about 17% below 2005 levels. Why? Largely because electric utilities have retired many of their coal plants in favor of cheaper and cleaner gas. Also wind and power source, solar power sources as well. This year, emissions expected, according to the Biden administration, to stay roughly flat. In part because rising electricity demand has led power companies to burn record amounts of gas, and those offset the renewable energy gains. We know as well, already made mention of it in our broadcast this afternoon, of the 2015 Paris Agreement. Every country, including at that time the United States of America, agreed to submit a plan for curbing its greenhouse gas emissions with the details left up to individual governments. Those pledges then get updated every 5 years. According to the Paris Pact, countries again anticipated to expected to issue a new round of plans before the next United Nations Climate Summit. That's scheduled for November in Brazil. We know, however, that the incoming president has said that he would pull the United States out of that Paris Climate Agreement that Joe Biden put us back into, and he would do what he did in the first term. His spokesperson said in a statement that Donald Trump will once again deliver clean air and water for American families while making America wealthy again. As a part of what the president announced today, a bipartisan coalition of governors across our nation, 24 different states, announced that they also would work together, also sending a message to this incoming administration to try to meet the new goal announced by the president today. Kathy Hochul, of course, as you know, is the governor of New York. She said this new collective goal will serve our North Star, capital N, capital S. And of course, environmental groups are also lauding this and encouraging all Americans to support all of this. Yet, just last month, you recall well the news, the United Nations Climate Summit in Azerbaijan. Several House Republicans warned world leaders there that the United States would not be beholden to international targets like this that are set by an outgoing administration. They took a pre-target move in saying that the United States would expand support for oil and gas under Donald Trump. All of that, as the country continues to wrestle with environmental issues, climate controls, and climate goals announced today by a president who, even in his last days, is advocating for the future of present generations and future generations as well. And speaking of those future and present generations, some major news coming out of Montana. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes running into the courts gets you something out of this. Montana Supreme Court on Wednesday of last week, this is a state court, it's not a federal court, upheld a landmark victory, a major success for, yes, indeed, some youth. The youth leading the way on this, they're climate activists. It affirmed a lower court decision last year by a trial court judge that Montana's, the state's energy policies, the things the legislature put in place there, violated the constitution of that state, violated the constitutional rights of the youth to the plaintiffs in this case, and actually to all people, of course, to a clean environment. Many of the 16 people who brought the case, it's called HELD, H-E-L-D versus Montana, testified during the course of that trial about the extreme weather that they had witnessed in their own home state. These are youth. These are young people. A major player in oil and gas and coal, of course, that we know that from Montana's history and its present activity. The youth arguing during the course of that successful trial that a state law that barred consideration of climate, barring consideration of climate in setting energy policy, that state law barring that was itself unconstitutional, inconsistent with the Constitution of Montana. The burning of fossil fuels produces the greenhouse gases that are dangerously warming the world. That's what the advocacy was. Of course, the trial, Supreme Court just this last week, supporting, upholding that notion that the energy policies of the state violated Montana's constitutional right to a clean environment. Cardi has once again got some oral and reporting on exactly what's going on in Montana, coming in the wake of the Supreme Court decision and this important decision made there by the High Court in this case.
One by one, these 16 young activists who've taken on the state are applauded as they head into the courthouse one final time. The group have become local heroes, bringing the first climate case of its kind to trial. The youngest, just 5 years old, here at the back. They argue that their health is being harmed by state policy that favours fossil fuels and that the government has a duty to protect citizens from climate change. Coal-powered plants produce almost half of Montana's electricity. The state argued pollution was insignificant. The judge ruled otherwise.
Montana's emissions and climate change have proven to be a substantial factor in causing climate impacts to Montana's environment and harm and injury to the youth plaintiffs.
This is an unprecedented victory in a U.S. court. The young activists want it to force the state away from using fossil fuels.
I hope that because Judge Seeley ruled our current energy policy unconstitutional, that we might be able to construct an energy policy that's more in line with Montana's goals and constitution.
Though the ruling only affects the state of Montana, lawyers for the group say they believe it may cause a domino effect across the country.
The clearest thing, or at least this initial first step, right, is that as of today, as of this order, it's unconstitutional for the state of Montana to continue permitting fossil fuel business as usual. They must consider the constitutional rights of young people.
State officials have called the ruling absurd. The reverberations from this small group's success could now impact the future energy policy of the whole state.
That's the reporting that Cardi has pulled up here on this trial that today results, last week results, and to this day results in the state Supreme Court upholding the trial findings that indeed those energy policies that do not consider environmental issues, greenhouse gases, they actually violate the Constitution of the state. As you heard there, a spokesman for the state itself, the Attorney General, whose name is Austin Knutson, called the decision disappointing, said the majority of the state Supreme Court justices yet again ruled in favor of their ideologically aligned allies and ignored the fact that Montana has no power to impact the climate. Well, the students there, the young people there, the youth there would beg to differ on all of that. Ricky Held, who is one of the named plaintiffs in the case, she's 23 years old now, testified at trial. She said this ruling is a victory not just for us, but for every other person in America whose future is threatened by climate change. The attorney who represented her and the other plaintiffs in the case says once again the decision is representative of a future of our children that cannot be sacrificed for fossil fuel interests. All of this, of course, attracting the attention of groups both pro and con across the nation. The provisions, of course, in the Montana Constitution make this possible for the Supreme Court to issue that kind of an order. It is one of the most strongest positions of the United States Constitutions. When we come back, more about this major environmental case in Montana here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, guest hosting at Maggie's invitation today while she is away for a brief holiday respite. We're talking now about the environment on the face of our planet, in our nation, in Wisconsin, and in a place called Montana, where, again, youth climate activists got a major win just last week coming out of the Montana Supreme Court that said, yes, indeed, you've got a constitutional right to have the legislature consider climate issues when enacting energy policy. And if they don't do that, they're acting unconstitutionally. Ricky Held, again, the named plaintiff, along with other people, a major victory here. Of course, all of this falls in the category of continued advocacy in many, many different venues. This in the courts, the mere fact that a Supreme Court says, yes, indeed, you've got a right to have policy in a particular state, reference and incorporate climate issues, does not change the world overnight, doesn't change Montana overnight, but it is a clear statement of a constitutional right, a landmark case, because it's the first court in the United States
to recognize a constitutional right to a stable climate. That is significant. Of course, it comes up against some political realities out there. Fossil fuel industry, lots of money, lots of advocacy there, is plainly going to push back on this, not only in Montana as policy is created there, but as others perhaps around the country pick up that same sort of mantle and seek to do the same. And of course, it takes much more than just a Supreme Court decision to change climate policy in America, in Montana. Nonetheless, joining with what our president has said today, an advocacy for future continued focus upon climate goals in the United States of America, goals that are achievable at 2035, all of this an affirmation of what can and should be done as we go forward here in the United States addressing this major issue having to do with climate issues and the concern for the present administration's policies, its focus upon youth and adults alike, and also the next administration's focus and policies. They maintain that they are going to also be doing things consistent with our best interests. That is the kind of thing that Americans need to hold the administration responsible for going forward. And as we begin to conclude this first hour on the Maggie Dawn Show, something from overseas, also about the power of the people. In the midst of a near disaster in South Korea a couple of weeks ago, when then President Yoon Suk-yeol declared martial law, you recall this issue very, very dramatically, within hours taking it down, realizing that his decision, unsupported by any constitutional premise or any need to declare martial law in that nation, people responding and saying, no, that's not what a republic is all about, taking back their government and not only ensuring that the legislature rescinded that, but the cabinet itself of President Yoon rescinding it, backtracking on that so that martial law in place for quite literally just a few hours here in South Korea, no longer a part of that history. But nonetheless, in the wake of that movement forward to impeach President Yoon, that underway, continued advocacy in the streets, in the school yards, in every single venue in South Korea against this, and indeed, a bit lighthearted, but nonetheless, the commitment of the continuing South Korean population who are using parody, P-A-R-O-D-Y, for political protest. South Koreans continue to take the streets this month, demanding the ouster of their president. A very serious matter, again, ensuring that the republic is where it should be, but finding an unexpected outlet to express their fury, and that's in jokes and satire on the streets of Seoul, other places. They hoisted banners, continue to do so to this day, flags with whimsical messages about cats and sea otters and food. They wave signs joking that President Yoon's declaration of martial law had forced them to leave the comfort of their beds. Of course, that, of course, silliness, but nonetheless underscoring the importance of what he tried to do. Pictures of flags spread widely on social media. The idea, once again, to use humor to build solidarity against Yoon, who has vowed, nonetheless, to fight his impeachment following his decree on December 3rd. Some of the non-existent groups that are a part of these whimsical flags include things like the Dumpling Association. One of the people says, I just wanted to show that we were a part of the people, even if we aren't actually a part of an organized civic group. Waved a flag of the dumpling group at a recent protest she went to. Some groups have referred to other local favorites in the area using pizzas and red bean pastries, all those kinds of things. In the past month or so, this continues, again, using some parody, have come up with a wide range of unorthodox groupings, and some of those includes self-proclaimed homebodies, some of those claiming that their rights as people who suffered from motion sickness also violated their rights as well. All of this in signs. You can see them on the internet, on the web, on a regular basis. The serious aspect of this, according to political people there, they're trying to say, of course, as one political leader said, even for those of us who have nothing to do with political groups, who are not involved politically, this situation is unacceptable. Not a member of any party or anything that's serious, but this is still outrageous. They held signs ridiculing the president, saying that he had separated them from their pets at home. disrupted their routine of watching Korean dramas. One group called itself a union of people running behind schedule, referring to the ideas that the need to protest over martial law had forced them to reschedule their appointments. People of South Korea nonetheless saying, we want our country back. They've taken it back in a show of advocacy this week, also with parody in that nation. The Maggie Dawn Show continues after this brief break. Stay with us for more discussion of politics here in America on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
If this day is a new bird, he sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow, we can build a snowman and pretend that he's a circus clown.
We'll have lots of fun with Mr. Snowman.
Yes, until the other kids.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.